This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome, everybody. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track, and we are Crush Performance, your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, do so. Go to our website, crushperformance.com. Check out our blogs, the podcasts, the links, and all the great information we have as we work to spread the good word and just educate everybody on all the information they might need access to in order to, you know, push your performance to where you want it to go. You will also find the podcasts there. They are available on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher. Just go to the podcast section and you can get access to all of those. Subscribe to them and you'll get them weekly. You can also dive deep into our archives, years and years and years of some of the world's greatest minds and what we think are some of the most relevant information when it comes to maximizing and pushing forward human performance. And last week's show was no exception. We had a great conversation with Dr. Martin Mrazek of the University of Alberta. And right now, Dr. Mrazek is spearheading the football side of a major, major concussion research project that is heavily funded by the NFL and the National Institutes of Health. It's a massive study that will include a number of different sports, but at the end of the day, really just trying to dig deep in one, how the injuries are happening, two, are we assessing them properly, and most importantly, maybe third, are we doing enough to help athletes return to play and get healthy? And are there strategies we can use to expedite or make that process better? We've come a long way since the days of sitting athletes in the dark room until they're symptom free. As Dr. Mrazek mentioned on last week's show, we're now at a point where when the concussions happen and symptoms allow, we're getting the athletes active and integrated into rehabilitation as quickly as possible. A fascinating and fast-paced change based on the knowledge that we have. Great conversation. We looked at what we know right now. We looked at where we were at. And are we doing enough? A bunch of great initiatives that we spoke about last week that are happening in sport because of the knowledge we've gained in understanding concussions and head injuries when it comes to sports and athlete safety. And when we look at the athlete safety side, some of the modifications that have been made, I think, are just genius. Though when they happen, it's like the seatbelt law. Everybody was up in arms when the seatbelt law came around, and I was one of them. I was there sort of at the age of just starting to drive when the seatbelt law came in, and I remember sort of a little bit of pushback from my side going, hey man, they can't tell me what to do. But I'll tell you now, I don't get in to the vehicle without my seatbelt on, and I feel naked if it's not on. It's funny how things change. Well, we saw similar pushback when we looked at the ban of body checking in hockey up to the peewee levels. The hockey traditionalists were up in arms, and some still are, but now that the dust is settling and we're a few years into the project, we're actually seeing the benefit. We're seeing a massive decrease in the number of injuries. We're seeing actually really good progression. And one of the big concerns were, if we're not body checking in peewee, what's going to happen when these guys and girls step into the bantam ranks and there's body contact? Well, you know, we're not seeing the big gap that we thought we'd seen because we're still educating and coaching body contact in peewee. It's just not part of the game. The skill game has actually probably increased. A great conversation there. We see the ban on heading in soccer. U.S. soccer has banned heading up to the age of 11. Researchers want to push that to age of 13. Could we see a ban in heading in the game right up to the professional level? It makes a lot of sense knowing what we know and looking at the impact forces of some of the headers that are happening in the game right now. We also have seen modifications in the game of football, which was a big discussion last week. We talked about the limiting of contact in practice, which is probably the biggest move we've seen in sport. There's lots of things you can do in practice without actually having the contact. We still need to teach that contact, but it's got to be done properly. And we have to do it in a way that helps really promote athlete health. Great conversation. And of course, in sports like football and hockey, we've seen new rules implemented that are discouraging contact in the head. And last week we got into the discussion of the death of Tim Haig, the boxer and MMA fighter who died earlier this summer due to a head blow in a fight up in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. A tragic loss, an untimely loss, but it raised a lot of questions as to regulation and how much should the boxing organization regulate whether an athlete can step into the ring or not, and who's liable at the end of the day, and should we not encourage our athletes to make better decisions? Is that what the issue is? That's an open-ended conversation. I don't think there's a right or wrong answer, but it's something that we need to dig into deeply so this kind of tragedy doesn't happen again. So today, we're going to continue the conversation on concussions and head injuries, and we'll talk with Tim Fleiser, the executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada, and the PR director for the CLF, Samantha Bureau, who is a former athlete who got involved in the research. And I want to ask her how getting involved in the research has changed her perspective of sport and developmental sport, and if it has at all. So stick around as we continue our very important conversation of head injuries and concussion in sport right after this on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sport scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com. And Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everyone. I am Jeff Kershaw. The Con Man is here, and we're your weekly source for performance information. That's right. Questions, comments, smart remarks, get to us. CrushPerformance.com. Info at CrushPerformance is the email. If you want to follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to our group. It's called The Talent Grid. We're getting a really strong, great community going there, sharing information and just commenting and looking at the latest research when it comes to talent development, skill acquisition, and just overall performance. It's called The Talent Grid on Facebook. So as we continue our discussion on concussions and head injuries in sports, some of the modifications we've been making to help improve athlete safety, and also in terms of their return to play to sport once they've had an incident, there are a bunch of organizations out there that are really looking at the cutting edge and trying to get a better understanding of what's actually happening to the brain when these injuries happen and what we need to do, again, to decrease the risk of injury and also make sure athletes return at the right time to their sport. We're joined now by the executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada, Tim Fleiser. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're well into the CFL season. The NFL camps are underway. NHL's right around the corner. Soccer's been fantastic. And all these sports have one thing in common. That's a very, very serious conversations on brain injuries and concussions. Tim, you know, with all your work and all your days playing football, I mean, you're you were the first ever CFL football player to have four Grey Cups and four different teams. You have a storied career in football. Tim, your work now with the Concussion Legacy Foundation has taken you to another part of the sport in terms of the injury prevention. Where are we at right now in understanding head injuries and concussions in sports?
Well, I think the good news is that we're way ahead of where we were 10 years ago. I think the bad news and the tough news is that there's still a lot of work for us to do in that regard. And football has been a game, and it was also a hockey player, soccer, rugby as a kid. So all these different sports where, you know, there's some challenges these days in and around head injury. And, you know, certainly sport was and is a big part of my life and, you know, has been instrumental in my own personal development. And as we look at what to do with sport at this point, you know, I think we want kids to be able to continue to play these sports. And continue to benefit from those personal development opportunities that come along with playing these sports. But the other part of it is that, you know, thanks to the work of Chris Nowinski and Dr. Robert Cantu and Ann McKee and our whole Boston group, we've got a problem when it comes to head injuries. And so, again, that's kind of the bad news, but the good news is we've got lots of really smart people working on solutions, and we are making progress.
We're talking with Tim Fleiser, the executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada. Well, you mentioned a bunch of very, very important people, Chris Nowinski, Dr. Cantu, Dr. McKee, everybody over there at the Concussion Legacy Foundation and Boston University that have done some fantastic work analyzing and looking at the brains of pro athletes who have passed on and donated their brains. This has created quite a movement. There's a lot of athletes who are playing sport today who have already, spoken about their want to donate their brains for research after they pass away. And we've learned a lot. Chris, do you think where we're at right now is sort of a turning point in our understanding of what's actually happening in sport? And do you think it's helping us steer how we manage athletes through their playing careers?
So yes to both, to answer both questions. I think when you're talking about the head injury issue, you really need to separate, because there is two different issues to talk about. One is acute concussion. I think the public's much more familiar with this at this point. And, Sidney Crosby was the case that I think really brought it to the attention of the public. And what you saw in Sidney's case was he got hit, had a concussion, came back and tried to play too soon before the concussion had properly healed, and ended up getting hit again, and was, out of hockey for a year and a half, and suffered through severe post-concussion syndrome. And I think that's a great cautionary tale for young athletes, which is, in so long as you report a concussion, and if it is managed correctly, which means that an athlete does not return to play before their symptoms have totally healed and before they've gone through the return to play and return to school protocols, 90% of concussions actually do heal. And so, if managed properly, acute concussion does not necessarily have to be that big a deal. I think the second part of the conversation, which now, through the work at Boston, that the public is starting to become much more aware of, and is frankly the nastier part of this conversation, is in and around chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. And what characterizes CTE is a tau pathology, the deposits of tau protein in the brain that then bind onto healthy cells, which is where, you see some of this degenerative disease pop up. Characterized by things like memory loss and impulse control. And really in its worst form, in my opinion, you start seeing some of these neurodegenerative diseases like ALS and Parkinson's and those sort of things. So lots of work to be done there. But again, there is a silver lining in that lots of good research being done on this. And they're really starting to, now that we've identified what the problem is, it's allowed the medical community and the research community to start working towards solutions.
Yeah, Tim, you mentioned that, the Sidney Crosby, I think, incident was the real eye-opener for people, and it really raised awareness, maybe to the point where people almost started getting fearful because we didn't really maybe have a clear understanding, in terms of the general public at the time. And I think there was a fear factor there, and I think we're still dealing with it. And studies that have come out, like the recent study in July looking at 110 of 111 former NFL players had CTE. That's a 99% average. It's really stirring the conversation. I think we still have a ways to go, as you mentioned, but what we've learned to this point, I think should also set people at ease a little bit, because we have a good understanding of how it's happening now, what is happening, and some of the preventative measures we're seeing in sport now really bode well for keeping our young athletes and even our professionals healthy and safe.
Yeah, like I said, I think things are much, much better. There's still some work to do to understand and really be able to quantify what some of the risks are that are involved. But like I said, that work is being done every day. And actually, a lot of that great work is being done in here in Canada as well. We're next week on Wednesday of next week, we're hosting our See the Lions Symposium at Western University. Eric Lindros, who's been great on the issue, is the chair of the event. We have Haley Wickenizer coming. We've got Logan Couture coming. And I think those sort of events where We get a lot of the leading researchers in the field, and look, there's great work being done at Western proper as well. Get out in front of the community. We've got 1,500 people attending again this year. So, you know, just a great event, totally sold out at this point. And at these events, the researchers are able to share their latest in terms of their work, and then, you know, are able to deliver that knowledge to the public. And so, you know, I think the hope is at that point that then the public's able to apply that knowledge in terms of the way that youth sports are being operated.
Yeah, great stuff. Hey, Tim, I got to ask you this. You know, we're seeing in the news right now, since that July study in NFL brains came out, the 99% study, you know, as a former athlete, you know, you went through sport as a big part of your life. You played multiple sports, which was great, all high contact sports. And if you knew then what you knew now, would your perception or your desire to play have changed? We see a lot of professional athletes and ex-athletes now saying that, hey, man, if I'd known then what I know now, I might have taken a different route. And we're also seeing some great young players retire early because of what we now know when it comes to brain injuries in relationship to sport. Just from your own personal experiences, what you know now, would it have changed your attitude towards sports in the heyday of your playing days?
So I think, you know, for all of us, whether it's football, whether it's hockey, rugby, soccer, all these different sports that are affected by this issue, I think there, you know, there's a lot, we are certainly all conflicted in terms of, you know, loving the games that we've played, having it been, you know, such an important part of our lives, such an important part of our personal development. But then at the same time, you know, wanting athletes to be safe. And, you know, certainly the results of Ann's work in Boston is alarming. But the other part that we need to remember, and, you know, Ann talks about this quite a bit, is, you know, that this isn't a comprehensive sample size, right? This is
right.
A relatively biased sample size, and that, you know, the majority of people who have donated their brains at this point are folks that have been struggling with some sort of issues. So it's actually one of the things that we need is more people donating their brains that have not had issues, so we can try and figure out, you know, why it is that some of us former athletes are struggling with these symptoms, and why some of us are okay. And so again, lots of work to be done there. I certainly don't think the answer to all this is to cancel sport. I think the answer is to continue to modify sport and modify the rules, and particularly the way that we practice. So a very good rule in terms of trying to limit. So when you think about the risk factor for CTE, the risk factor is basically how many times an athlete has been hit in the head during the course of their career. Because what you know, we're surmising about the cause is it's basically the cumulative total of the subconcussive hits that an athlete receives during the course of their career, which, you know, I'll speak for my own situation, would mean as a defensive lineman, you know, the every day, every play, head-to-head base blocks with an offensive lineman. I mean, that really is the big contributor to the risk factor. So, I mean, I think if everybody involved with sport understands that we want to reduce the number of times that athletes get hit in the head, whether that means, you know, a young soccer player heading a ball, whether that means, you know, contact for a young hockey player or a young football player. I think if everybody is understanding who's operating sports, so that's coaches, administrators, parents, basically every time there's a hit, there's a certain cost that goes along with that, and really working to limit the number of times that athletes get hit in the head. And I mean, I can just share my own opinion, which is, you know, for athletes under the age of 12 years old, I think they should have very, very limited contact, and focusing on developing skills in sports rather than developing the contact side makes more sense. And then, you know, as kids get a little bit older into their teenage years and their necks get stronger, you know, you can start to introduce more contact. But there's lots of things that we can do and to help modify the game. And when we want to talk football specifically, one of the big ones is limiting the amount of contact in practice.
Right.
Because we know that 75 to 80% of the hits an athlete, a football athlete takes is in practice. And so If you were to reduce those where you, you know, virtually eliminate contact in practice, I mean, you're going to need to have some contact before you put an athlete out there in a live game situation. But if you, you know, other than some very limited drills here and there in preparation for the season, if you virtually eliminate contact in practice, you'll, in theory, be reducing your risk factor by 75 or 80%.
That's a big number.
These are the sort of things that we should be contemplating, you know, as we look at how the future of these sports are going to continue.
Yeah, 75-80% reduction in risk. That's a big, big number, no question about it. We're talking with Tim Fleiser, the executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada, former pro football player. You know, it's interesting. We look at some of the great players who played the game, and I remember reading about Jerry Rice and his approach to practice. And I remember a reporter asking him, how in the heck did you survive so long in a league where the average career is like, you know, 2.4, 2.9, or 3.3 years? And he said, I hardly ever practiced the game. I practiced parts of the game, but he never, ever practiced like the full contact practice. He only put it together in games. So that kind of goes to what you were saying, Tim, in terms of limiting practice, developing skills, and limiting those risks, especially through the developmental years.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, looking back through my career, I mean, two of the coaches that we never had any sort of contact in practice was Ron Lancaster and Don Matthews. Hmm. And it almost seems like maybe there was a inverse relationship between the success of those coaches and the team and, you know, the amount of contact that we had in practice. So, you know, I think for some of the guys in football who have been real leaders in the game, I don't think this is necessarily a novel concept, is unnecessary contact in practice just isn't really useful when it comes to winning and losing at the pro level.
Yeah. So, Tim, we're seeing a bunch of great initiatives, and you kind of alluded to them earlier. We've seen the ban on body checking in minor hockey up to a certain age. We've also seen the no-hitting rule in U.S. Soccer, which I think's an interesting move, and I think it's one that's going to spread worldwide. I think it's a positive move. But now there's talk about banning high school football, and I wanted to get your thoughts on that, being a former pro football player. What do you think about the ban on high school football? It's such an important year period for development of young players, and if we handle it right, I believe it could be done, you know, in a way where we limit the risk to those players. I wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Yes. So, you know, first of all, yes, the Hockey Canada and raising the minimum age for body checking has been very successful, and that data has shown a dramatic risk or reduction in head injury. So that has been successful. I also totally agree with what you discussed in terms of banning headers for kids under the age of 12 in the same way that they've done in the United States. And I think that's something that the Canadian soccer community, in particular Soccer Canada, should look very long and hard at. In terms of football in high school, and again, you know, I said earlier, I think, you know, you've got kids as young as 6 years old playing tackle football, and I think it's great that they're out and they're playing sports, but I think we should think long and hard about, you know, whether or not 6- and 7-year-olds need to be participating in full contact. And I think that certainly, you know, goes, you know, whether you're playing peewee football or whether you're playing in the pros, I think, you know, having those conversations and really going out and thinking about, and look, we do have lots of researchers looking at this as well. Going out and getting that data and figuring out, you know, what is an acceptable risk for these young athletes playing. But football has been a game, you know, going back to the invention of the forward pass, that has always evolved over the years. And when you look back, there's been periods where people have questioned whether or not the game should continue to be played because of the health risks associated with it. And certainly my hope is that we're going to be able to modify the game so that those young athletes can enjoy the same great experiences and personal development that my generation did. But certainly we can't ignore, you know, what the research is, all the facts and the data that the researchers are bringing forward.
No question. Tim, you know, awareness and education are going to be a big, big part of the future, especially in the contact sports. You guys have a fantastic initiative coming up in early September, the Team Up Speak Up program. Let's talk about this for a second, because this is something that I believe everybody should be aware of. Fantastic program.
Yeah, so this is the second year that we're doing it. It's a social media campaign, and one of the things that we've seen is one of the big reasons that athletes do not report concussions is they don't want to let down their coach and their teammates. And so what we're asking is at the beginning of the school year, when a lot of the fall sports are starting up, is that athletes participating in sport post a short video with the team leaders, that being the team captain, the coach, or the medical staff, giving a short speech to the team saying, look, if you experience any of the symptoms of a concussion or you recognize those symptoms in a teammate, the expectation is that you tell the coach or the trainer and that that athlete is removed from play until they're cleared by a healthcare professional. And one of the strong supporters of this initiative is Gordon and Kathleen Stringer, who have gotten to know very well over the years and have been just fantastic advocates and supporters. And of course, their daughter, Rowan, who's a 17-year-old rugby player in Ottawa, unfortunately went and tried to play with a concussion and ended up passing away as a result of second impact syndrome. So they've been fantastic advocates and will be part of this initiative, as will Eric Lindros again this year and last year with the initial launch, we reached 3 million people across North America, and so we're hoping to do it much bigger and much better this year. And so, yeah, really looking at September 12th, and the initiative is Team Up, Speak Up. And if people want to get more information, they can look on our website at concussionfoundation.ca.
Tim, thanks so much for this. Absolutely great information. We have to thank you and everybody over at the Concussion Legacy Foundation for all of the work you're doing to improve athlete and player safety, but also push our understanding of what brain injuries and concussions are really all about. Just fantastic stuff and a very important conversation. We'll continue to follow you guys and all the initiatives you have, and we'll touch base closer to September when the Team Up Speak Up program really, really kicks off. We have to cut out for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with the PR director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, a former collegiate athlete who got into the research side. We're going to ask her if the research has changed her perspective of what sport's all about after this on Crush Performance.
Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the Fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penn. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. We are your weekly source for performance information. If you have any questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Info at Crush Performance is the email. And if you have a topic you'd like us to look into, or an idea that you want us to investigate, let us know. We look at them all, and if we like it enough, we may dedicate a segment of the show or maybe an entire episode to your idea. And I can tell you this right now, one of the upcoming episodes will be a war on sugar focused at sport drinks and energy drinks due to a great Twitter conversation we've had at Jeff Crushes, the Twitter handle. But there's some really good topics that people are very passionate about, and I think we need to have a better understanding of the big picture. So we'll go out, we'll talk to the world experts,
and we'll bring back and get the answers on air. So that's what it's all about. So get to us at crushperformance.com. We continue our discussion today looking at concussions in sport, and nobody's done a better job of helping us understand what's really going on in the moment in terms of rehab and return to play, and in terms of the long-term issues associated with brain injury, than the good people at the Concussion Legacy Foundation. We just finished up a fantastic conversation with the executive director of the Canadian arm of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, Tim Fleiser, ex-football player, Harvard grad, all-around great guy, and he's spearheading some great initiatives along with Chris Nowinski out of Boston. And I wanted to continue the discussion. We are joined now by Samantha Bureau, the PR director for the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada. Samantha, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Happy to be here.
Well, you know, your, I guess, path to getting to this point in your career with the Concussion Legacy Foundation, it's been an interesting, I guess, trip for you. You started as a collegiate athlete playing hockey down in the United States. You got involved in the research at Boston University, and here you are now as a big part of the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada. Maybe let's start off with your hockey career and how that got underway and how that led you down to the U.S. and then to Boston University.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm from a big hockey family. My mom actually was the first Canadian woman to get a full scholarship to the U.S. So there's a lot of pressure there on our side to follow up with that legacy. But I grew up playing in Ottawa and then had the opportunity to go down and play at Franklin Pierce in New Hampshire. And like my mom, I got to start a program. So that's always, you know, nice to look back on. And we had a great 4 years. And once I graduated, I was really looking at getting involved in the research. I want to do medical school. So it was really a natural progression for me to look into the neuroscience aspect of it. So I, you know, applied for a position that not too many people had the opportunity to get to. And I spent a year with Dr. Stern and Dr. Ann McKee, and I have no regrets about it at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. Fantastic stuff. And pioneering the way in your mother's footsteps. What a great story that is. I didn't realize this, but the first Canadian woman to get a college scholarship in the States. Boy, oh boy, that's a feather in the cap right there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely a lot to work up to, but she was a forward, so I decided to play defense to at least separate myself that way.
I like it. So the family pond games were probably pretty exciting, I imagine, during the Christmas breaks and holiday seasons.
Oh, definitely. I mean, she still plays 4 or 5 times a week, so now we actually get to play together, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, that's pretty great. And you going down to New Hampshire and actually pioneering that program, that's an interesting adventure in its own.
Yeah, definitely a risk, but honestly, our team was amazing. We were ranked number one as the new program our freshman year. We got a mention by the Olympic Committee our second year as the best independent program in the country. And then we had our first 20-win season as a third-year program. So not many people, you know, get that opportunity to walk into something that's so new but so strong.
Yeah, fantastic stuff, Samantha. Sam, you know, in your time with the Boston University crew there, they're doing such great work in their research into brain injuries and the long-term effects of the impacts and concussions in sport and what's happening to these athletes. What was it like to go in there and understand what's going on behind the scenes, seeing all these donated brains and how they're analyzing them and tracking down the tau proteins and looking at the effects of multiple impacts on the head through sport? Must have been an incredible experience walking in and getting involved with Dr. Cantu and Dr. McKee there in Boston University.
Yeah, no, it really was amazing. And the thing is, you walk in and you would never know that they were the top in their field from the way they treated everyone. Like, everyone was really looked upon like very highly, and it was more of a family in the office, which was great. I worked really closely with Dr. Bob Stern doing all the neuropsych evaluations. So we did that aspect. And then when we'd meet up with Anne to get her side of the picture, because we try to keep everything separate so that, you know, none of the evidence is tainted in any way, so to say. We get to see what the pathology was for these people that we've collected all this data from. So it's really nice to see everything come full circle and really get to know, you know, these subjects from both a medical and, you know, like a personal history perspective.
So in your work with Dr. Stern, with Bob Stern, what did that entail? Because that's a big part of the picture that a lot of people don't really talk about. I mean, that's not the side that really gets the publicity out there when we talk about what's happening, but it's a very important part of the puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. So working with him, our main role was really to administer neuropsych evaluations to participants who were still living. So the main project I was on was actually our largest study at the center that really no one really knows that we do it unless they're in study. And we are talking to thousands of athletes who've played at a variety of levels for a variety of years. And we just kind of track them year after year to see, you know, if they're cognitively declining, if they're staying the same, what type of symptoms they're experiencing. So we're collecting all this data year after year. And we're actually in the process of working on putting out a paper about some of the trajectories we're seeing for these participants, because we have such a large pool and no one really knows that side of the work.
Samantha, are these athletes that have donated their brains once they've passed on, or are these athletes just random athletes you guys are testing out?
A good portion of them do decide to donate their brains. We have a pretty strict criteria because we do have, you know, a good chunk of people who are reaching out to us. So we're just trying to fill those gaps of people we don't see the brains from. But definitely we do see a lot of our participants for the Legend study, you know, being willing to donate their brains down the road. And the nice part about that is if we get both, then we have their history taken year after year in a very, you know, set manner. And then we also have their brain available to us, you know, if and when they do pass away.
Yeah, the information that could be garnered out of that could be very, very impactful. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. And it's definitely a very long-term project. So it's, you know, nothing's going to happen overnight, but it's something that if it does come to it will be incredible for the field.
We're talking with Samantha Bureau, the PR director for the Concussion Legacy Foundation in Canada. Samantha, you know, we've seen Dr. McKee speak numerous times, very passionate about what she does. And I remember in one interview, in her opinion, she mentioned that, you know, once an athlete has a major incident, major head injury or concussion, she felt that that should be pretty much the end of their career based on what she knew. I thought that was a very powerful statement. And I think that had a lot to do with what she sees behind the scenes. But I think, you know, when you get involved in analyzing these brains, the perspective really changes on what's going on in the real world of sport. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. And it's one of those things where, you know, it's hard, especially being an athlete. You know, being on the ice and on the court, on the track means everything to you. But for some people, I guess you are forced to have that tough decision on whether to continue or whether to, you know, give up the sport that you love. And I was very fortunate to never have to come to that type of crossroad because of a head injury. But I do know people who have had to make that very difficult decision. So definitely very eye-opening.
Well, we have people watching Sidney Crosby with great interest. We know that probably with a few more injuries, knock on wood, we're hoping it doesn't happen, but he has to make some hard decisions. And we also know that Eric Lindros is a great ambassador for you guys in North America. And there's an athlete that had to make some hard choices. So it does happen. And I think what we've learned over the last 5 years has really bode well for, I guess, one, awareness, but also in terms of parents and coaches and organizations and how we should handle these injuries when they happen. And I think we're really moving in the right direction there.
I definitely agree. And the parents and coach aspect is so huge because a lot of the times the players don't necessarily understand what's going on, especially at a younger age. So to have, you know, everyone kind of aware of the issue and what we need to do, like it is something that we can, you know, fix. Like one concussion is not the end of someone's career. Like as long as it's treated properly, you know, there's no evidence that suggests that they will never be the same, but the proper precautions just have to be taken to make sure that they are fully healed before they decide to go back out and, you know, rejoin the game.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, the Center for Disease Control in the United States estimates that around 3.8 million concussions are happening a year, but only 1 in 6 are actually diagnosed. And that is a big deficit right there. You know, if we look at the fact that most of the concussions that actually happen aren't getting diagnosed, and therefore probably aren't getting treated properly, that's where we could probably make up a lot of ground.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, even personally, I know I definitely had some undiagnosed concussions. And luckily for me, I knew what the signs were and how I needed to prepare myself to make sure I was ready to go for that next game or practice. But there are so many people who aren't in that position and they don't know what they need to do.
Yeah, and I think that's where the medical staff and just education of parents and coaches is so, so important, because the athletes, you know, we know how hard it is to understand and be in the right mindset, especially if it does happen to you, right? You need those people around you. And we see those initiatives happening in sport. We see the NFL, you know, they're partnering up the players. They have spotters in the stands. You know, we're not sure how effective that is. But just the overall education process has really come a long ways, and the Concussion Legacy Foundation does a great job, even at the school level, of getting into the classrooms and educating teachers, parents, and coaches. So we're moving in the right direction. And Samantha, with some of the programs that we're seeing now, you know, Hockey Canada, you know, banning body checking up to 13 years of age. We have U.S. Soccer, you know, eliminating heading up to, you know, 11 years, 13 years of age. They're looking at expanding that. We're seeing limited contact in football practices. There's talk now about eliminating high school football. How far do we go in terms of keeping our athletes safe, in your opinion, and knowing what you now know after working with Boston University and with the Concussion Legacy Foundation?
Yeah, that's definitely a difficult question, because, you know, we love sports and this is why we do it. And there are so many benefits that athletes get from playing a sport, whether it be team or individual. So it's kind of that fine line between deciding, like, does it really hurt the player or is it hurting the game at that point? So we need to be able to find a way to keep the athletes safe, but, you know, allow them to enjoy the sports that we grew up playing and reap the benefits from. I mean, things like communication, teamwork, these are skills that people develop while playing these sports that, you know, people who don't play sports growing up, maybe they don't have those qualities that these athletes are getting. So it's one of those things where we want to find that balance between the two. We definitely don't want to get rid of sports altogether or rid of specific sports, but we do need to be conscious of the risks that are associated with some of them.
Yeah, I see a big opportunity here, Samantha. You know, if we look at what's happening in sport right now, the dropout rates are at an all-time high, especially through the ages of 13 and 14. We have like a 70% dropout rate of organized sport, and that has a lot to do with injuries and burnout. You know, in the developmental levels, I love some of the modifications that have happened. As we mentioned, the ban on hockey, on body checking, the ban on heading. It allows athletes to focus on other skill sets and maybe more important skill sets that allow them to become better players, whether they go on to be elite or not. An opportunity to maybe modify the developmental levels of the game to really focus more on the skill set rather than the competition side. You know, so there's a silver lining to this that goes beyond reducing the risk of injury. We can also have a good opportunity to really modify and maybe improve our entire sports system, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, that was kind of the basis of my undergraduate thesis, was really the effects of competition versus the benefits of recreational sport. It's really, where does that line get drawn? Why are elite athletes facing certain pressures that maybe our recreational athletes aren't facing, and they're reaping benefits? So it's really been a debate for many years whether, you know, competitive sports are really that great for people, if we need to modify it in a way to help from the mental health aspect. Like, there's just so many issues revolved around sport that are really hot topics right now. And it's something that, you know, everyone's excited to learn about, which is great. And we can move forward and hopefully make sports for the next generation, you know, like a really great atmosphere, and hopefully turn that dropout rate around and keep kids involved for a longer period of time.
Right, Sam, I'm going to put you on the spot here, if that's all right. If we were to run a campaign and vote you in as queen of sport, based on your master's thesis there, what kind of modifications would you love to see? What would you do if you were in charge and you were able to wave that wand and make it actually happen? What would that look like in your world?
I mean, for me, I think the biggest thing is encouraging kids to play multiple sports. Like, growing up, I didn't only play hockey. I started at a very young age, but I played soccer at just as high of a level. I played softball at just as high of a level. We all played touch football together in the summers when hockey was out. And I think it's really important, if you look at Wayne Gretzky or any of these other players, they'll all say the same thing, that kids who played multiple sports and, you know, played lacrosse, played basketball, played football, they're gaining other skills that are improving their game, and they're getting a break from hockey, they're getting a break from football, whatever their main sport is. And it's important to be, you know, a well-rounded athlete, a well-rounded person. So I just think if everyone played a couple more sports a year, even if it is just at a recreational level to have fun with it, that would do wonders for their main sport and, you know, mental health, everything in between.
I like it. I like the campaign. You got my vote for sure. No question there. Hey, we're talking with Samantha Bureau, the PR director for the Concussion Legacy Foundation up in Canada. Samantha, you guys have a lot of great initiatives in terms of education and awareness, but there's one that's that you're very, very passionate about. Maybe we could talk about the Rowan Legacy movement that we're about to embark on.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, being from Ottawa and actually probably playing against Rowan at some point in my life in high school sports, it definitely hits home for this story. And projects here in Ottawa is really, you know, we're focusing it on the education, outreach, prevention aspects. We are tying in research as well, but we're just trying to increase the awareness in the community. So hopefully no family will need to go through what the Stringers experienced back in 2013. And this is us going into the school systems and giving presentations. It's us working on ice and on field with athletes, teaching them safe hitting or angling techniques, whatever the sport requires. It's us working with student athletes at the local universities to get them involved. It's really bringing the community full circle to support this initiative. And then hopefully the legislation with those changes, maybe future provinces will follow suit and Canada will see this drastic change.
Yeah, Samantha, for our listeners that might not be familiar with Rowan's story, can you sort of fill us in on the inside scoop as to what's happened? Because you're right, we need to take this situation and really make it into, you know, what you guys are doing, a legacy movement that I think is very appropriate. So, you know, for our listeners that might not be familiar with Rowan Stringer's story, can you maybe fill them in as to what exactly happened and what are some of the things we could do now looking back to avoid this from happening again?
Yeah, definitely. So Rowan Stringer was a high school athlete, and she played rugby for her local high school. And she had a couple of concussions that, you know, she hadn't told anyone about, or at least, you know, her coaches and people weren't really aware of and didn't think that there was a risk. So she went out and played her next game like she would normally. And unfortunately, she was hit again, and she ended up passing away from second impact syndrome, which is essentially the second impact after you have a concussion can cause these risks. And it's not something we see all the time, but unfortunately it did happen to her. And when she was brought into the local hospitals, there really wasn't much for physicians to do for her. And then they ended up donating her brain to the Boston group for them to look at it. And that's just really sprung this whole initiative here. And Rugby Canada has been wonderful. The local rugby teams here have been great because that was her sport. And we've named a rugby pitch after her. We're, you know, the concussion law is, you know, named after her. So it's really a good way to commemorate her and hopefully raise this awareness for other families.
Yes, and an important legacy. There's no doubt about that. Sam, thank you so much for your time today. Just a great conversation, such great information and great awareness as well as we try to share information that gets people thinking about what they should be thinking about. Thanks to you and everybody over there at the Concussion Legacy Foundation. And that's the show for today, everybody. A very important one. If you want to get the podcast, you can get it on iTunes or Apple Podcast, Google Play, or at Stitcher. And you can get access to all of those on our website, crushperformance.com. Just go to the podcast button, punch it up there, and you can get connected. Download the podcast, listen to them when you drive, share them with your friends, and most certainly give us your feedback, most importantly. I got to thank you guys for listening today. We have to thank Tim Fleiser, the executive director of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, as well as Samantha Bureau, the PR director. A really good conversation, enlightening, and I feel really good about the information that was shared here, so I hope you do as well. Coming up in the next few weeks, the Crush War on Sugar will continue, and hockey's right around the corner. What should you be thinking about as you prepare for your hockey season? This and much more in the upcoming weeks on Crush Performance. We'll talk to you then.